members to just try to please maintain noble silence. It's a continual stream of mindfulness, from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock once we start. So whether we're sitting or walking or eating lunch or using the bathroom. In the beginning, especially the first day, it can get pretty rough. It can be almost difficult to think of it as a profound aesthetic experience. But, try to keep the effort going. And then, at some point, when the concentration starts to happen and things start to click, even eating your lunch can be an opening to enlightenment. I mean, after all, Ananda, the very famous story of Ananda, who was the secretary to the Buddha, when the Buddha passed away, of course, for the last 30, 40 years of his life. And Ananda had reached, the first stage of awakening, but he wasn't a fully awakened arahant, the fourth stage. And so, one week, I think several days after the death of the Buddha, all of the arahants had gathered, Moggallana and Sariputra and all the, all the big disciples, the advanced disciples had gathered. The intention was to get together and to share the knowledge of the Buddha, so this was like a convocation. And so they would codify, the teachings of the Buddha by sharing, all of the masters would get together and share what they knew. And Ananda knew more than anybody else because he was, he was the secretary of the Buddha and he was with the Buddha for 40 years. But he wasn't an arahant. So they kept telling Ananda, Ananda, you got to get enlightened so you can join our convocation. So, it's big, big pressure, right? And so he was just meditating like crazy and just walking and sitting and walking for several days. And he was just trying so hard, but it just wasn't happening. And he was getting really frustrated. So finally, it was the last night before, the convocation, and he was still, struggling. So he said, oh, I've had it. This is too much. I need a rest. And so he lay down on his bed, and from the moment he sat down and laid down, he awakened. It was just in that moment of lying down, awakening came. Now you can say, well, gee, how did that happen? Right? Well, it was this pure moment of mindfulness. This pure moment where everything came together, and all it took was just lying down. So, this is an example that the opportunity for this kind of clarity, this opportunity for this kind of presence lies in every moment of present awareness, every instance of present moment awareness. That unfolds whether you're sitting, walking, eating, whatever you're doing. If that mindfulness is there, you can hit that zone, you can hit that space of clear presence. Once we begin, to just try to keep that space consistent as much as you can all the time. So noble silence is a really important part of that. It's just maintaining noble silence, maintaining that concentration and that focus all the way through. Okay. I just wanted to kind of set the tone by reading a poem. And this is a poem written by one of our members last year. It was such a beautiful poem. Jodi is a wonderful poet and writer. And so I really felt I wanted to share it as a way of kind of, giving you a sense of what the feeling. I mean, this is the feeling. Of course, this was written toward the end of the meditation, so she had the benefit of 5 days. So, but in a way, this kind of sort of gives a feeling, a sense of, what can happen. And there are three short sort of haikus. And one is Walking Meditation 1. Okay. It goes something like this. The turtle looks at me. unblinking. He has been up all morning eating lotus leaves. Walking meditation two. The turtle is swimming in the lotus pond, watching me walk, lift, move, place. We are not so good on land, the turtle and I. Walking meditation three. The turtle blinks once, twice, but I am still here. Tomorrow I will be gone. Thank you, Jody. It's very beautiful. Okay, today what I wanted to do was really concentrate on the process of meditation. And as I said before, rather than, you know, emphasizing a Dharma talk, you know, like the Four Noble Truths or, you know, something like that, theoretical, conceptual, I think the real value of these retreats is the ability to really focus on the meditation process and themes and issues and problems related to meditation itself. You know, the Dharma follows naturally. You know, like mindfulness follows from concentration, the Dharma follows from meditation. So the meditation is really, it's important to understand the meditation almost as a primary, fundamental source of learning before we even get into the Dharma, because the meditation itself, you know, is so powerful. So I wanted to talk about basically three major, four major topics. One is the importance of stillness, the whole idea of stillness and silence, and what that means. The whole idea of relaxation, the importance of relaxation, why relaxation is important, and what the effect of the relaxation process has on the development of concentration. The importance of breathing. Breathing is the foundation for the practice. So it's really, really important to have a really strong grasp of the various techniques of breathing and how breathing is used in the meditation process. And last but not least, actually there are more, but noting, the whole process of noting, you know, what noting is, you know, how we bring awareness to the object. I mean, these are the core techniques, if you will, of the meditative practice. And it's really the product for me of many, many years of thinking and, you know, sort of figuring things out. And I can tell you, you know, you don't get this kind of material in books. It's mostly Dharma stuff. So this is the raw material of, you know, the process itself. Okay, so I want to begin with stillness. There are basically two kinds of stillness. It's very important to understand. One is stillness in sitting meditation. So in other words, static stillness. And the second is stillness in motion. Stillness in movement. Now, there are two different topics, but they're very strongly interrelated. Now, stillness in sitting meditation is really sine qua non of the meditative process. You have to be still. You have to be still. You cannot be moving, you know, scratching, turning, you know, unless, of course, it's, you know, in a state of movement, which we'll talk about later. But the whole idea of stillness is to remove the body, you know, literally remove the physical body as an obstacle to the perception of phenomena. Okay, so the body itself does not become an obstacle. Now, what that means is, well, for example, if you're sitting here, you know, turning your head, you know, you're turning your head. You know, all your attention is in the body movement, the muscle movement. If you're scratching, you know, if you're kind of fidgeting around, you know, all of your energy, conscious and subconscious energy, is devoted to, you know, what your body is doing. So the body has to be completely, completely still, because what you're trying to focus on is what's happening inside the body. You know, whether it's, you know, sensations, energy, movement, or thoughts, emotions, memories. In other words, the inner contents of what's happening in the body, internally. So externally, the body has to be completely, completely still, so that it's almost as if you're freed from your body. The body does not exist. It becomes completely translucent, transparent, invisible. So your body has to really become invisible. Now, in the practice, people who have gone into deep, deep levels of concentration describe the feeling as rock-like stillness. Rock-like stillness. In other words, you're so still, you're like a rock. I mean, you're not moving at all. Okay, so in other words, your body is virtually invisible. It's not, you know, it's not creating any movement. All the movement is happening inside the body. You know, whether it's, you know, sensations, energy, thoughts, feelings, emotion, it's all inside the body. So the body is completely, completely immobile. Now, I like to use the term crystalline stillness. I mean, crystalline is better. I mean, a rock is opaque, right? It's a rock. But a crystal is translucent, transparent. So I call it crystalline stillness. And in my own practice, I've had experiences where my body is like a crystal. You feel like it's a crystal. And not only is it completely transparent and translucent, but it's emanating light. It's like you become a body of light. So you're like a clear, transparent, translucent crystal. You know, and everything that is happening in light. So it's, but that only occurs, of course, obviously, when you're, you know, coming into this profound, deep state of concentration. So it's this kind of rock-like stillness. Now, the best sort of analogies that I can, you know, metaphors or analogies, the observatories on Mauna Kea. You know, the reason why, you know, observatories are on mountaintops, way, you know, in the countryside, is because they're far away from city lights. Because the city lights, the reflection of the city lights, interfere with the capacity to see out into space. And of course, you're high up, so you're above the clouds, right? So you need to get away from all the noise, you know, visual noise, audio noise, any kind of noise that distorts your capacity to see clearly. Another analogy is, you know, the wildlife photographer. You know, this person goes into the forest, and he builds this blind, and he takes 2 weeks worth of food and he sits in this blind sometimes for 5, 6, 7 days before any wildlife begins to, you know, emerge from the forest. You just have to sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait. And finally, after a week, you know, this little animal peeks out from behind the, you know, leaves, and of course he's ready with his camera to catch it. But it's that kind of stillness, because if there's any kind of rustling, movement or disturbance, you know, the animals won't come out, right? Because they can see really clearly that, you know, there's somebody there, right? So you have to be that still in order for things to arise. And it's the same thing in the meditation. The mind, the body has to be that still, and the mind has to be that still. You know, so that you can begin to see, you know, information arising from your deeper levels. So stillness is, you know, fundamental. So when we meditate, you know, it's like you can know when you're still. You can know, and you can, you know, you can actually think of it like, okay, I'm going to be really still, and just, you know, kind of tell yourself, and then just sit and not move a muscle. You know, just tell yourself that, and allow the breath to be very subtle, very gentle, and just rock-like stillness, and see how long you can hold that. In the beginning, you know, you might be able to hold it for, you know, 5 minutes. But, you know, eventually your body shakes and something happens, right? So the thing is to build up that momentum, you know, through meditation, where that stillness just naturally arises from within. So that's what we're aiming for, you know, that kind of stillness. Right? Now the stillness in movement is about finding that place of stillness in the mind. You know, it's that same quality of quiet mind, you know, no thoughts, you know, samadhi. I mean, it's the term of samadhi. Even when you're moving. So, you know, this is like in walking, eating, moving about, with that same quality of samadhi that you develop in the sitting meditation. So you're building, you're bringing that same silence of mind into movement. It's a stillness of mind into the movement. So, and this idea is similar to the concept of flow, where everything moves with a complete unity of mind and body with no extraneous thinking. Now, we've all heard about this. I mean, it's a very it's commonly known, you know, in the conventional world. And you see it in sports, tennis, basketball, track, music, you know, musicians, piano, you know, classical musicians, jazz musicians, rock band, any kind of musician, in the arts, painting, sculpture, writing, creative writing, poetry, any kind of skill-based activity. I was talking to someone the other day about Tai Chi. You know, Tai Chi is, you know, you can get into really deep forms of, you know, samadhi doing Tai Chi. Or yoga, or, you know, things that involve some skill-based activity where, and some form of movement where the mind becomes, you know, the activity, you know, what you do, you know, you've mastered the technical aspect of it, so you don't have to think about what you're doing, so that you're just completely free to open completely into the movement itself, right? So dance, of course, dance is the primary example. So this is, you know, when I was describing the walking meditation, or, you know, that's the kind of paradigm, that's the kind of image that I have, that sort of flow movement where the mind and the body are completely integrated, and no thought is occurring. You're just moving naturally, you know, with this completely unified mind and body in time and space. And that's, you know, people who have experienced that, you know, the quality of ecstasy, the quality of joy and rapture that you feel You know, when you move like that, when you can access that kind of, you know, mind state. So this is sort of, and it's very much akin to meditation. You know, when you get into deep forms of concentration, that same form of rapture, that same form of tranquility, you know, and ecstasy start to arise. So it all comes from that capacity to quiet the discursive mind, right? So this is all concentration practice. So what we're doing when we do the concentration practice is actually a very direct, you know, application of the technique of quieting the discursive mind. You know, if you were playing a piano, you wouldn't be thinking about quieting your mind. You'd be more concentrating on your chords and your fingering and all this kind of thing, right? You see what I'm saying? So if you meditated and played the piano, you know, they would reinforce each other, because the meditation would teach you how to, you know, quiet the discursive mind so that when you play the piano, you would just come into concentration immediately. You come into the zone. So that's why meditation is so facilitates and supports, you know, any kind of skill-based activity, whether it's dance or creativity or art or music or sports. You know, meditation is really important. You've all heard about, shucks, I forgot his name, the coach of the L.A. Lakers, you know, the basketball team.
Phil Jackson,
right, yeah. I mean, he was trained in Zen meditation, so, you know, he started to teach the team members meditation. And so it becomes part of their regular routine, their training. You know, they learn mindfulness meditation before they go into play basketball. So, you know, this is a known thing. But, you know, this is where it all kind of comes together. It's all related to concentration and this kind of inner stillness, finding this inner stillness in the movement. So the foundation is finding that stillness in the meditation practice, but then applying it, you know, into movement-based activities, walking, you know, and, you know, any kind of skill-based activities. So if you understand that, you know, you understand the sort of, you know, relationship and the transferability, it just turbocharges your whole life, because, you know how to come into the zone in terms of whatever you're doing. And it could be, you know, just in your job, you know, if you're an accountant, or if you're, you know, some supervisor, you know, you know how to focus, you know, you can focus, you can do your work efficiently, in all aspects of your life. You know, this becomes a really, really powerful tool. And so it's important to understand, you know, that connection, you know, so we understand that, you know, how it can be applied, you know, in our daily lives, so that we can live more efficient, more productive, more creative, you know, lives with, you know, less stress, less, you know, less afflictive emotions, as it were. Now, we spoke about this a little bit this morning, and I'm just going to repeat it, but I won't get too much into it. And that is the effect that meditation has on enhancing and amplifying sensory awareness. As your practice deepens, you will find that your capacity for sensory awareness, you know, through the six sense doors, whether it's smelling, tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, feeling, and even sensing through the mind, becomes enhanced. It's amplified. You don't really realize until this actually happens to you. But say you're drinking a glass of orange juice, or, you know, whatever, or yours, an ice cream cone, and your mind is thinking about something. Okay, so you're eating, you're drinking your orange juice, but you're thinking about, oh, what I'm going to do today, or I have to make an appointment at 9 o'clock to see so-and-so, you know, which is what we do when we have breakfast, right? We're drinking orange juice and thinking about all the stuff we have to do in the day. Now, of all the energy that you are expending in that time when you're drinking the orange juice, you know, if you would say all that energy is about 100%, you know, in terms of your the focus and the perceptual capacity that you have in that moment, right? As you're drinking the orange juice and you're thinking about what you're going to do, I would dare say at least 50% of your psychic energy is not focused on drinking the orange juice, right? It's focused on what you're going to do. So only part of your capacity for taste is being engaged, because the other part of your brain is thinking about other stuff. Now, if you were drinking this orange juice in a meditation retreat and your mind was still, all of a sudden 100% of your energy would be going toward tasting that orange juice. And boy, that orange juice will taste a lot different when you're focused 100% on that orange juice. And that's, you know, this is what this means. And this has happened to me, and it's happened to a lot of people who, you know, have gone through that stage of, you know, concentration. Your capacity to hear things is just amazing. You know, you hear sounds that other people don't even hear. You taste things that food tastes amazing, you know, or sights, colors. You see colors with a vividness that you don't ordinarily see. Your capacity for a sensory awareness, touch, is enhanced. And as a matter of fact, you know, in the practice, the whole concept of siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S, which are paranormal powers, you know, which is often spoken about in relationship to meditation, comes from this capacity to enhance our sensory capacity through concentration. Now, of course, you know, it extends all the way up to, you know, the great gurus actually materializing things out of space or walking through walls or levitating or doing all these kinds of, you know, amazing things. But, you know, that's way beyond, you know, what we're doing here. But in your practice, in my practice, in our practice, you can experience, you know, this enhancement of your sensory capacity, which is part, you know, of the basic process. Now, the reason why this is important to understand is that it's through this enhanced awareness that you are able to access at a deeper, more refined level the perception of what's happening in your body. So if you're feeling emotions, like afflictive emotions like anger or fear or grief or, you know, or even joy or happiness, your capacity, these emotions become really, really enhanced because you're completely open. The mind is not, you know, getting in the way. Your capacity to focus and perceive what's happening is almost doubled or tripled. So you feel, you sense, and you perceive at a much, much, much more deeper, refined level. So, for example, you know, emotions. You know, what is the feeling of fear? What is the feeling of grief, sadness? What is the feeling of joy? What is the feeling of happiness? And this also, you know, so from a mindfulness point of view, it opens the door. I mean, it gives you a whole nother kinesthetic doorway, sensory doorway, to perceive what's happening within yourself. As the concentration practice itself deepens, it allows you to see the whole thing about rapture, bliss, equanimity, you know, these highly refined states of jhanic concentration that people attain in the practice. It's all about feeling. It's all about knowing what bliss feels like, or rapture feels like, or even happiness, joy feels like. These are all different terms describing different mind states. There's a difference between rapture, and there's a difference between rapture and happiness, joy, and equanimity. And the difference is in the refinement of energy that you experience when you feel these states. Okay. So, the ability to achieve these states is based on your ability to discern the feelings of those states as they arise in the body. So that requires, obviously, a much more refined capacity in terms of the ability to feel. Now, we were doing the walking meditation instructions earlier, what is the, it all starts with the predominant sensation in your body, right? The feeling of my butt sitting against this hard board, right? That's where it starts, right? You build from that. You know, then from there, it's the feeling of, tightness around my waist, or the feeling of, emotions, anger, or loneliness, or despair. You know, what does it feel like? So it gets, the feeling of energy moving around my body. So I become very somatosensitive. I become much more sensitive to my body. And there are a lot of amazing side effects, because then you become more sensitive to your physical body. So if you have an injury, or you have some kind of internal organ problem, or some malfunction or dysfunction, you feel it. You are more sensitive to what's going on in your body. So it has a very powerful health effect in terms of just simply building your awareness of your body, in a much more refined, deeper way. So the meditation, is the doorway to this kind of awareness. And it's all about feelings, sensitivity. So it's, really refining this capacity to feel, sensing sensations in the body. So it's all about this enhancing and amplifying sensory awareness. And that's why I really want to make that very clear, so you can understand the importance of that. Now, the third subject that I wanted to get into was the relaxation process. I've got two more that I wanted to cover today. One is relaxation and one is breathing. But breathing is a big one. So let me cover relaxation for now. So what is the purpose of relaxation? The purpose of relaxation, of course, is to relax the body. I mean, obviously, it's hard for you to do the meditation if your body is tense and you're having muscular, tension or pain, and things are, there's dysfunctionality in the body. So, to release all of that as much as possible. But at a deeper level, the purpose of relaxation is to develop a sense of lightness, transparency, and translucency. It's like stillness. I mean, this is allied to the concept of stillness. So you're removing the body, as a kind of constraint, as a kind of barrier, as a kind of obstacle. And the way to do that is through relaxation. Now, what I want to do is sort of go through the relaxation process. I'm not going to go, the whole relaxation sequence that we do is something that's evolved over about 20 years. So it's a very studied, kind of process of relaxing the body, sequentially from the forehead all the way down. But what I want to do is, maybe I'll just kind of, sort of touch on the highlights so you can understand the purpose for which, these instructions, are created. So it starts with, so what is the purpose of the opening breath? The opening breath, you notice whenever we start with this long, slow opening breath. And then we do it, twice. And then we do it about three or four times before we even start the relaxation process. The whole idea is to slow down the metabolic process in the body. The intention with that big breath to just bring the energy level down. So, you know, there's a calming effect, there's a slowing effect, and if you do it right, you know, within 3 breaths, you can be in samadhi. It's that quick. And it's that important. And that's why it's that important to understand, you know, the function of the breath. Because most of the time, if you didn't do the breathing and you sat down to meditate and you immediately focused on, you know, just the breathing and the noting and the letting go, you would be spending the first half an hour just fighting through all the agitation in your mind. And that's most people who do traditional Vipassana, that's what you do. And you know, the first 45 minutes is just, you know, just fighting through all the thick underbrush, you know, all the discursive thinking that's going on in the mind. So this is a real shortcut. You know, it's like a, you know, kind of pedal to the metal, you know, bam, you know, you just take these big, huge, humongous breaths and you just bring the energy level down. So that's the, you know, the first sort of big hit, you know, when you come into the meditation. And if you do it correctly and you're experienced in this, you can come into samadhi almost immediately just by doing this. So it has a very powerful effect of slowing the body down, slowing the thinking process down, and bringing down your metabolic rate. Basically what you're doing is you're bringing down your metabolic rate by doing that. Okay. Now, in the actual guided meditation, I find that the part of the body that carries the most tension, the most tightness, that we pay often the least attention to is our face. You know, of course, you know, we have a lot of tension in our body, in our muscles, and you know, legs, but the face, because this is where we carry, you know, all of our mental stuff, right, in our head. So the releasing of these muscles, the brow, the temple, and the eyes, are key elements in just kind of allowing the whole facial, you know, sort of facial mantle to just release down. And then the releasing of the jaw, you know, releases all of the sardonicus muscles and, you know, in the lower facial area. So you're basically allowing your face to just droop. And you're just removing all of the tension. And, you know, how much tension do we carry? Right around our eyes, right around our brows, you know, in our temples, you know, because we have creased eyelids, you know, these tight, constrained facial muscles, right? That's why I call it a mask, because we're going around like this all the time. So just allowing this to kind of just literally. So, you know, it's almost as if, you know, your whole muscle, your whole face is kind of melting down. Just allow it to completely let go. And when you release your neck, what you're doing is you're releasing the entire muscle base that's holding up your face. So when you release the neck, the face just kind of droops. Now, then we move up to the top of the head, the crown, and this whole area around the temporal lobes and the back. Most of the activity that you feel when you get into deep states of concentration happens in this area, either in the prefrontal cortex or the temporal lobes, the right and left temporal lobes. And, you know, states of tranquility, states of rapture and bliss are all, you know, it's all this energy that's flowing up through the spine, through the back of the head, and right up the top of the crown. So what you're doing is you're basically loosening this whole area, this whole mantle around your cranium, so that you're literally kind of opening. You're literally opening your upper mantle. That's why when you do it, it feels like your head is expanding. You know, there's this sensation of expansion and loosening. Then you're loosening the muscles going down the back of the neck, so the head just becomes very loose. And then oftentimes when you feel the energy flow, some people call it kundalini, some people call it chi, it's rising up through the spine and right up the top of the back of the head. So, you know, you're just opening this whole area in the back of the spine. So when you bring them, you know, your awareness to that area, it's really just about kind of opening it up, opening it up. When you start to feel sensations of the energy of rapture, it invariably is this sense of tingling. So when you start to meditate, if you start to feel anything unusual, okay, tingling, vibration, pins and needles, or sharp prickling sound feelings, things that you don't ordinarily, you know, like kind of unusual, like, you know, I'm feeling, you know, like one thing is sizzles, you know, I call them sizzles. It's like you drop a fried egg on a hot frying pan, right? It's just sizzling, you know, the sensation of sizzling in the skin, you know, like just this hyper energy. Oftentimes in your temporal lobes, you might feel it in the front, on your right temporal lobe or your left temporal lobe, depending on, you know, your personal predisposition. But if you start feeling, you know, unusual sensations, that means things are being activated. Things, energy is flowing in a certain way. Pay attention to it. Because it means that, you know, gradually all of these energy flows, often, actually what it is, it's, you know, once there was this fantastic show, The Human Body, some of you might remember it. It was here in Hawaii, I think. And they have these, you know, they actually dissect the, you know, the nervous system of the human body, and you see this human shape, which is, you know, sort of comprised of these microscopic filaments, right? Just incredible microscopic filaments that really, you know, it's like in the shape of the human body. And you realize that our entire skin is comprised of billions of microscopic, you know, receptors that are all wired together. I mean, they're basically, it's a whole wiring system, right? So what's happening is that you're unleashing sort of bioelectric energy that's moving through your body, you know, in ways, because you're in this deep state of meditation, you know, they're sort of moving in ways that are activated, in ways that they aren't, wouldn't normally be activated. And so once these patterns of random movement become cohesive and start gelling together, they can manifest as full-blown rapture. You know, it really comes together. So the point is, when you start to feel these kinds of sensations in the body, move with them, you know, bring your awareness to them, really kind of, you know, this is the mindfulness, allow your mindfulness to really move with them, and allow them to begin to move and cohere together, and eventually it will mature into full-blown rapture. It does happen. This is how it happens. But it, you see what I'm, but you see what it requires, right? It requires that really refined sensitivity to be able to sense and feel, you know, what's happening in the body, and just kind of open to it, allow it to manifest, allow it to move, and, you know, play out. Don't go like that, or, you know, start scratching. You see what I'm saying? This is the whole point. When we talk about itches, you know, we talk about weird sensations. You know, normally, we start doing this, right? You're just killing it. You know, you're just wiping it out. So just, you know, so this is the whole point. You want to get out of the way. Literally get out of the way. Get the body out of the way and get the mind out of the way. Let the mind be completely silent, quiet. Let the body be completely translucent, and let the body do what it does. And you find you'll just come right into this natural, blissful state, this ecstatic state that starts to arise when you just open the door. And the way you open the door is by quieting the mind and quieting the body. So it's basically letting go. This is what letting go is. Okay, so, you know, this is, you know, this is pretty advanced kind of knowledge in terms of, you know, how to get to higher states, you know, of concentrated, you know, concentrated absorption, you know, basically rapture and bliss. So, but it's all about stillness, it's all about relaxation, it's all about getting the body out of the way, and it's all about getting the mind out of the way. So, and yet, at the same time, enhancing your capacity for conceptual, perceptual awareness, so that when things start to form, you know, you can actually, in a way, guide it, you know, with your conscious awareness to begin to become cohesive and cohere so that it starts to become something. Now, the thing about all of these mind states, whether rapture, bliss, or anger, or shame, or guilt, you know, it's a complex of array of emotions, but they're all built on a finite number of energy states, a finite kinds of energy that we experience in the body. What leads to the complexity is this incredible capacity for combination and permutation that these forms of energy create when they combine in different ways. It's like if you had, say, five forms of energy, but 5 to the cube number of combinations could lead to 5 times 5 times 25, right? So that would lead to 300 some odd or whatever, several thousand permutations that arise only out of five variables. So one of the things you realize as you get deeper into the practice is that the basic forms of energy that you experience in terms of basic forms of sensation are finite. But as you get into feeling various emotions or feeling sensations in the body, it's how they come together that creates the particular nuance that creates a particular feeling tone that's attached to a particular emotion. See? So if you're able to kind of sort of see through that, you're basically sort of seeing the whole anatomy of how emotions, how sensations come together. And that's, you know, very, very powerful. And so this is really, you know, the foundation of this kind of understanding of, you know, the dynamics of emotions and how they arise. As emotions, as well as the dynamics of sensations, you know, that are connected to, you know, the higher levels of concentrated absorption. So, you know, in a way, you know, they all come back to the same source, which is this sensitivity, this refined capacity to perceive sensations in the body. Sensations in the body. And think of it as, I mean, when you get down to the microscopic level, there's an entire network of sensors in our body that's activated in a whole, you know, myriad different ways. So what we're doing is we're literally bringing our awareness down to that level. So we start to see the movement of this energy and how it all comes together in ways to create the mind states that we experience. So this is where the relaxation, this is the stillness, you know, sort of all comes together. Okay, so perhaps we could have a moment of silence for the day.